And we will be hearing House Bill 5031, Department of Human Services, Health Services in particular. Mr. Britton?
Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, could you open a work session on House Bill 5032,
please? House Bill 5032 is the subject of discussion today, and we'll have a work session.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House Bill 5032 is the Senate Bill 333 process with respect to fees that the Public Health Division within the Department of Human Services raised during the 2005-07 biennium. These are fees that are given to them with respect to, they have authority to put these fees in administrative rule. They are not in statute, so they have authority to raise them during the biennium. The Senate Bill 333 process, as you know, requires the legislature to ratify those fee increases, and this bill contains those fee changes, and it raises about $1.8 million of revenue. We had public hearings, two of them, back in March on the 12th and the 13th. At that time, Bill Coulomb, who works for the Public Health Division, testified that stakeholders had been involved in the discussions during the administrative rule process in the setting of those new fees. So with that, I would turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Britton, are there any questions of Mr. Britton before we go forward? Representative Gerard.
John, was having a meeting with mean there was an agreement on the fees?
Madam Chair and Representative Gerard, what I wrote in my notes, and it's been 3 months, was that Mr. Coulomb testified that stakeholders had been involved in the setting of those new fees. So I can't attest to the fact that they agreed with them, but they were certainly involved.
At the time, as I can recall, that he had stated that they did not do these in isolation, but that the supporters, or what do you call this before?
The stakeholders,
that's what I'm looking for, had been involved in making those fees a reality. That means to me that they were a part of those increases and supported them. Is Mr. Coulomb?
I don't see Mr. Coulomb here today.
Now I do.
Yeah. Doctor, why don't you come on up to keep your feet to the fire? Ms. Coulomb.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Coulomb, Department of Human Services, Public Health Division. Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, in response to your question, your LFO staffer has basically addressed the question in response to the way we had addressed it, and that is that all stakeholders for each of these program fees were invited through the process of public hearing, input, and consideration in adjusting those fees. To say that no one objected to the fee, I could not make that statement. Obviously, there are going to be some constituents who would rather not have a fee increase. But in general, most of the fee payers and the stakeholders have agreed and have compromised with the program to what is absolutely necessary.
Further question, Representative Ferrari?
No. Thank you.
Questions of the members of the committee?
Okay. Are you ready for a motion?
I am, Mr. Sandy.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 5032 to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves House Bill 5032 to the full committee with due pass recommendation. Comments? Questions?
I'll be opposed, Madam Chair.
Objections?
The only Republican here.
The only
one. Enough to carry it.
Enough to carry it. The committee with sanity.
Good buddy.
Okay, I'd like to thank Representative Gerard for giving us a courtesy vote and allowing us to move House Bill 5032 out of committee today. Without objections, the bill passes. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I'd like, if you would, please, to open a work session on House Bill 5031.
We open a work session on House Bill 5031.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'm going to be walking through two things that I gave you already, and that is the memo from me to the members of the Human Services Subcommittee concerning the health services budget within the Department of Human Services. I'll start with that and move pretty quickly on to the spreadsheet, and we'll be walking through that. And if Mr. Sorensen could hand out that to the members of the audience, that would be helpful. On the memo, the front page shows the actual expenditures for the health services program area. As you know, the health services area within Department of Human Services includes the Oregon Health Plan. It includes mental health, which involves the Oregon State Hospital, as well as community mental health. And it includes the public health division within the Department of Human Services. The current budget for 2005-07, the legislatively approved budget, is $4.9 billion. That's the middle column of this memo. This is as of the May 2007 rebalance, and that was in Senate Bill 5547. You can see there the governor's recommended budget of about $6.1 billion total funds. And finally, you can see the LFO recommended budget at about $5.6 billion total funds, and I will show you how we got there in just a moment. Two other things I want to point out, and that is right below the table, about the third line down, the recommended budget is 27.7% general fund and 14.7% total funds higher than that legislatively approved budget for the current biennium. The recommended adjustments will include the department's reshoot adjustments, which they reviewed with you some weeks ago, and you can see those in just a second on the spreadsheet. The bullets down below show the additions to this particular budget, and likewise you'll be able to see those in the spreadsheet. I made a note on the second page that the appropriation bill amendment, the Department of Human Services budget is all within one bill, that is House Bill 5031. So the amendments to House Bill 5031 will be presented after the preliminary work sessions that Sheila began yesterday. Ms. Baker began with the Children, Adults, and Families program area. And on Tuesday, we're planning to kind of pull it all together, and we'll show you how we've amended House Bill 5031. I'll get to performance measures in just a moment, as well as budget notes. We don't have any budget notes for you to review today, but we will have those on Tuesday, and they involve a number of different subject areas. As you know, budget notes must be approved by the co-chairs as well as the chair of the subcommittee, and then you must approve them as well. And if they are approved, they will be included in the budget report for House Bill 5031. With that, I want to move to the spreadsheet and walk you through that. This spreadsheet really consists of two main sets of issues. The first set is on the first page and a half of this spreadsheet packet for you, and it is the reshoot adjustments. These were adjustments that were provided to LFO and to you by the department that reprices the department's governor's recommended budget based on caseload changes, corrections of errors that might have occurred in developing or putting the governor's recommended budget together, changes in match rates, changes in the pricing of policy option packages. Those were all included in the department's reshoot. And as I noted a moment ago, the department reviewed those adjustments with you, I think the second or third week of May. So I'm not going to go line by line through them, but I would point out a couple of major adjustments. On line three, there was in the reshoot savings in the AIDS drug assistance program. These were savings that were projected based on a look at caseload and also, more importantly, pricing of how much this program was cost in the current biennium, as well as a look to the future. So these were savings that are projected in this particular program. I would note that the legislature has always attempted to fully fund this program, so this is not a cut to services, and my understanding is that this budget provides enough funding for those that are projected to be eligible for this particular program. Another adjustment that I'd like to point out to you is on line 11. A good bit of discussion occurred with respect to the Oregon Health Plan caseload savings. As you know, the governor's recommended budget was developed using caseload forecasts that occurred last fall. And the new caseload forecast was developed over the winter and finalized in March, and it was used for both the current biennial rebalance as well as repricing the governor's recommended budget. The caseload is projected to be not as high as it was in the governor's recommended budget, and you can see the general fund, projected general fund savings on line 11, $44.7 million of general fund. I might add that this is the lion's share of why the department's overall reshoot is coming in at about $32 or $33 million general fund less than what was in the governor's budget. This is one of the major drivers right there on line 11. A couple of other things on line 14. Just to remind you that within the Division of Medical Assistance Programs is a clawback payment related to Medicare Part D. Based on new information as to the costs, the department in its reshoot was recommending a $6 million general fund reduction or savings in the clawback payment that is made to the federal government related to those who are dual eligibles in the Medicare Part D program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Breyer.
Would you give me the definition of clawback? Is that an adjective or a noun?
Don't let it be an adjective, sir.
Madam Chair and Representative Girard, when the Medicare Part D benefit was put in place several years ago, one of the provisions and one of the mechanisms that was used to pay for that Medicare drug benefit were payments from the states, based on the numbers of people, the dual eligibles, related to who would be receiving Medicare Part D. And it's based on a particular formula. It was euphemistically termed a clawback because the states didn't like the fact that the federal government was making them pay for some of the benefit.
Okay.
So that it is known by most people as a clawback, even though that's a...
I'm not sure that's a compliment, John.
It isn't a compliment.
Madam Chair, if I could answer the good representative's question, it can be either an adjective or a noun, depending on its usage in the sentence.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Who is that mask now?
I know. John, could you tell us what line 13 is?
Yes. Line 13, I've termed it here a Children's Health Insurance Program phase-in double count. When the department reviewed the governor's recommended budget, it discovered that it had double counted a change in CHIP policy, which moved eligibility from 6 months to a full 12 months. But they had put that in essence, twice, both in a phase-in package, an 021 package, and also as they projected the CHIP caseload. So we only needed the money once as opposed to twice. So this was an error in the governor's recommended budget, and it's being backed out in this reshoot.
Follow-up? Thank you for that clarification. And just so I can feel comfortable, the 12-month will stay into the, is projected into the next biennium, the 12-month enrollment for all the kids?
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Morley.
Thank you. If we could go back to line 9 for a moment, Mr. Britton, those dollars are matchable.
Madam Chair and Senator Wardley, they are.
Does this represent the maximum that is available? Are we taking full advantage of matching opportunities?
Madam Chair and Senator Wardley, it represents the Medicaid match rate on dollars that would be used to settle to a full cost for these rural health centers that are affiliated with hospitals. Yes, it does.
Thank you. Further questions? Mr. Benton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Down at the very bottom of the first page, line 25, and if you would please turn to the next page, line 26, line 27, 28, and 29, all relate to the Oregon State Hospital. And I'd like to walk through those just a bit. On line 25, the first is a replacement of federal revenue that had been wrongly assumed in the governor's budget. There is not as much federal revenue as was projected originally. It requires the backfill of with general fund, and that is the $3.8 million. In a similar way, on line 26, you can see that there were other funds, revenue that was included in the Oregon State Hospital budget that after further scrutiny is not available. Again, backfilling on line 26 with $6.8 million of general fund.
Thank you. Before we move that page, can you tell me what 6 is for GRB error?
Yes. On line 6, on the first page, in the development of the governor's recommended budget, there was, when they added it all up, they discovered that they had spent more tobacco tax than they had available. And they removed the other fund's expenditure limitation associated with the too much tobacco tax, but failed to backfill that excess with general fund. So it was an honest mistake.
Thank you.
Not that I ever make any mistakes.
No, I'm sure never.
Never.
Well, there was at one time. back on line 27. Here, on line 27, we're using some other fund revenue that we expect to get from billing Medicare Part D providers for some of the medications that are used at the Oregon State Hospital for patients who are Medicare eligible. So this replaces, in essence, the cost that the state incurs for providing medications, assuming those persons are Medicare eligible. This is kind of a flip side to the clawback, Representative Garrard. This is a good benefit for the state. Line 28 relates to a particular case that is being transferred to Blue Mountain Recovery Center that requires significant staffing. You can see an addition of almost $900,000, 9 positions, 9 FTE.
One case?
That's my understanding, Representative Kotek. Yes. Finally, on line 29, actually I won't say finally, but on line 29, our additional general fund to pay for OSH expenses. You'll recall that when we did the rebalance, there were significantly higher Oregon State Hospital costs than had been originally budgeted. And my direction or my advice to the agency when we looked at all of that was to say, make sure that the 0709 Oregon State Hospital budget contains enough money in it so we don't have the same kind of problem in 0709. So they have been taking a real hard look with a new business manager, a new budget analyst, to look at the Oregon State Hospital costs, look at the revenue sources, and come up with a budget that will be appropriate for the Oregon State Hospital going into the next biennium.
Mr. Britton, just a question, my assumption is that the problem has been corrected. Historically, there had been some issues with respect to accounting and programs from mental health with DHS. Has that all been resolved?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, I hope it has. I would say this, that the department has made a good faith effort to look specifically at the Oregon State Hospital financials. And I believe I said during the rebalance, or they presented the fact that they had added some financial folks there who have really taken a hard look at this. I can't promise you, however, that we've cleared everything up. But I will say that, in my opinion, progress has been made.
Mr. Nichols, please join us. To give further substantiation to what Alan was saying, so that to answer Senator Winter's question, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bob Nichol, and I'm the Assistant Director for DHS and responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. Yeah, we made some changes. We added a Chief Financial Officer to the state hospital, which had never been there before. We'd relied, I think, overly much on program leadership, and we really needed to have someone with a sharp pencil come in. I wouldn't say that we will not find anything else, because we're still going through everything with a fine-tooth comb, but I'm much more confident now than I was 2 years ago.
Further question on Ms. Nichols before us?
No, I just thank you.
Well, and I just important.
Absolutely.
Well,
I'm just, is it me? Am I just the only one curious about the one? Can you address that one case?
Representative Boom, obviously I can't go into any detail about the details of this, the specifics of this particular patient. Occasionally we do run into patients who require extraordinary levels of staffing, you know, seven and eight people per shift, because they can be so assaulted and so dangerous to protect staff and other patients. We've had to really load up. I can tell you that in this particular situation that things are much, much better, but we were not entirely confident that they would stay that way, so we left this in. If we don't have to spend the money on those staff, I would see this as something we'd bring forward with some skills.
Thank you. That's fine.
I just want to remind the committee that Mr. Britton is one of this piece. We had a long conversation around this issue at the state hospital. We're number one, we don't have enough staff, and so therefore they are doing a lot of overtime work. Number two, there's a nursing shortage, which is even worse for this particular community than any other community of nurses, and so therefore it triples the kind of time that we have. And so when you see the costs associated with the Oregon State Hospital, what you're looking at are costs for people who are have a very discrete kind of education, and it's and people have high incidences of burnout. So please know that that's what Ms. Nichol is faced with constantly, in being able to find staff and also ask other staff to do double time in some instances. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Line 31. Is some further Oregon State Hospital costs that are projected to be associated with the Department of Justice CRIPA, and I wish I could remember what that acronym stands for, but it is a Act of Institutionalized Persons. It is a protection. It's a federal law that relates to the protection of institutionalized persons. Last winter, I believe, or fall, the Department of Justice, Federal Department of Justice, indicated, and it has done so, that it is conducting a review of the Oregon State Hospital. And the department has cooperated with the Department of Justice, but these are some costs that the department believes that it will incur to meet its obligations related to the findings of that review. Finally, on line 34, we have community mental health projected savings. I want to talk about that for a moment with you. This is really a combination of about four items. One is that the bed cost of some of those community placements was counted as way too high in the governor's recommended budget. So again, this was a mistake in the pricing in the governor's recommended budget. Once the department looked it over, it discovered that it had overpriced those beds. I think the cost was about, in the governor's budget, was $95,000, and it should have been $9,500. So there were some savings given that particular mistake. It also, and these are, I hesitate to use the word savings, and you'll understand in a second, but there are further delays in the projection of the development of further residential community mental health placements. You'll recall that during the 2005-07 biennium, in response to a Harmon or a settlement that we call the Harmon settlement, further funding was given to the department to develop community placements. Those have not proceeded as rapidly as everyone had hoped, and there's another $1.6 million of general fund savings because those the development of those placements has been is projected to be delayed.
Madam Chair?
Senator Butler?
It would be good at this point to again put on record what is behind the delay, what barriers are being encountered, you know, the projections that we had aren't working out. So what are we forecasting now? Let's get this on record so that we can all be clear about where we are hopefully headed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, Bob Nicol, DHS. There are several important reasons why we haven't been able to get people out as quickly as we had projected. One of them was that in the Harmon versus Fickle settlement agreement, which we entered into, we probably were overly ambitious in terms of setting the numerical targets. What we committed to doing was using all reasonable efforts or language like that to get to those targets. We didn't make those targets. I can get the details for you on that. The reasons that we didn't hit some rather ambitious targets, I think, really had to do with the caution and care that we collectively in the state take in discharging people who've been criminally committed. Remember, these are people who've been convicted of committing a crime, and they're guilty except for insanity. So these are people that arouse a lot of community fears and concerns, sometimes very rightfully so. Sometimes, you know, people are not really quite as scary once they're very stabilized on medications. But there's a lot of caution on the part of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, which makes the ultimate decisions about whether a person can be discharged or not. And also on the part of clinicians, we don't want to put forward plans that are going to end up falling apart on us having a dangerous person out there off their medications. And so I think the overall reason is that we're very cautious about the discharge and community development process.
Follow-up.
Senator Bordet?
Thank you. Mr. Nicol, and so what are the new targets and what level of confidence do you have that the new targets can be met? And what additionally should this legislature be aware of in terms of the need for additional resources, capacity, as we move toward sine die, what do we need to be aware of that will keep a sense of urgency around this piece?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the settlement agreement that set the targets is scheduled, and I believe at this point that it will end on July 1st. That was the termination date of it. The Oregon Advocacy Center has indicated in at least one meeting that they're not likely to pursue breach of settlement, because I think at this point they're convinced that we have done everything that we reasonably could do. They may file another lawsuit, and so that could change what I'm saying now, then we would, I assume, try to enter into another settlement agreement. I can assure you that we will use the experience this time in terms of being realistic about where we set our targets. I didn't feel good about not meeting the targets. I do feel good that we tried everything that we could. So in the development of the governor's recommended budget, we've tried to take our experience this biennium into consideration. As far as getting the exact numbers, I don't have those with me, but I can get them for you if you'd like that.
That would be great, though, if you get it for all the numbers showing the different placements and where people are.
And the question was two-part. It's what are the new targets, but also what level of confidence do you have that the new targets can be met?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I have confidence that we'll meet the targets that we put into the assumption to get to the governor's recommended budget. The level of confidence, I don't know whether to try to attach a number. I can tell you that we honestly tried to set realistic targets, and we'll see how close we come to them. I believe that we can do it. The problem at this point isn't so much finding providers. I think there are providers out there, and we've branched out, and we've even looked out of the state some, and we've brought in some creative people. We're exploring some other potential providers who we haven't contracted with. So I don't think that's the limiting factor so much as it is just preparing people and getting them ready.
Just one last comment. So given that the settlement agreement ends on July 1 and that you said that the Oregon Advocacy Center is not likely to pursue a breach of settlement, but they may file another lawsuit, and I don't know if anyone's here from Oregon Advocacy Center, but again, what is there anything else that we need to be aware of as the department makes the next steps? What else should we be aware of? What else do you need from this subcommittee and from the legislature so that you can move forward with the resources and the tools that you need to get the job done?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the tools that we need, I think, are primarily in the area of getting ahead of this problem with more front-end services, and I'm not going to try to put quantities on that because I know that's something that you're considering as part of this. And but I think programs like the Early Assessment Support Team in parts of Great Britain where they've been using this approach for a long period of time, they're seeing a tenfold reduction, according to an article in a recent issue of Science magazine, in the number of acute psychiatric admissions. We've had one set of communities in five counties that have been using that. I'm encouraged to see that it's still alive in the budget that you're considering to expand it into two or three other communities. That kind of resource is really critical. Other resources are wraparound services that we can provide. In the area of forensics, I think that we could do a better job, and we have some funds available through our forensic caseload growth projections to take people who are in the Oregon State Hospital. They're not yet adjudicated to the Psychiatric Security Review Board, but if we would wrap services around those people and take them back into the community and maybe talk to the courts about setting up a diversion agreement so that the charges that are pending could potentially be dismissed if they can stabilize and we can get them housing. All of those kind of resources are what we need, I think, to get ahead of this problem.
And, Madam Chair, we do need you to establish for us how short will be the budget in meeting the front-end service needs that you are talking about, so that we're all very clear about the investment that that we will be making and where the gap is, where the gap is.
And Chair Senator Gorman will be happy to work with you on that.
Okay.
I'm not going to try to attempt to do that right now because it's obviously a pretty technical issue that is going to get a, I think it's almost necessarily get us going into this biennium, and then we're going to have to see where we're at. We obviously have a lot of problems with people who, with mental illnesses ending up in the criminal justice system and the homeless, and I think without a very substantial increase, we probably will see many of those same problems continue, but I'm hopeful we'll have a budget that will reduce that number this by
Mr. Jim? I just want to follow along on the thought. It would be well if you could present us with some figures that talks about the gap. I think we know that where we are right now, that it may not be possible for you to get on your wish list. But I think that what I hear the good senator and some of our concerns, and my concern is that if there is a gap, I think we need to know where those gaps are.
Madam Chair, and Senator Winters, if I could just remind the committee that we did issue a report that was based on what we heard from a variety of stakeholders. And the figure, if I remember right, was $105.6 or $5.9 million that we would need next biennium to almost fully meet all of the kind of needs. And maybe that's a number that you recall.
Yeah. And it is a number. Thank you.
That's the gap we're talking about. Yeah.
Madam Chair, with that, I would propose to move to page 3, which shows the beginning of the LFO recommended adjustments. And I'm looking at line 38 down through line 56. All of those relate to something that the co-chair's budget did back in March. Now, there have been some adjustments to some of those adjustments, and you'll see all of it in just a moment, but I want to walk through those with you. Line 38, there is nothing on line 38. In the co-chair's budget, this particular policy option package, 10339, which was to provide equitable A&D treatment funds, had been removed. Now it is being added back. So that's why you don't see anything here. We're not taking anything out of the governor's recommended budget with respect to that policy option package, but it is listed here so that folks understand that it is not being removed. It remains in the legislatively or the LFO recommended budget at this point. Line 39, this also related to a policy option package. Originally, this policy option package to support local health departments was at about $4.8 million in the governor's recommended budget. It had been entirely removed in the co-chair's budget. You can see here that what we are removing is about $670,000, six positions, 4.5 FTE, which were related to the Department of Human Services program support. We've talked to the department about that. They believe that the rest of the funding, the remaining $4.2 million, can be distributed to the local health departments.
Madam Chair. Representative Cortez. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to see the public health dollars in the co-chair's budget. On the staffing issue, I understand that the department says they can handle this, but what does that mean internally at the state office for public health?
What are you referring to?
Oh, I'm sorry, the reduction in the six positions. And I ask for the benefit of something we should look for next time around, because...
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Chair of the Department, Chair.
A long day. Director of the Department of Human Services, Chair Carter, members of the committee, that line item would exclude six positions, and I'm going to defer to Mr. Coulam about to define exactly which ones they were.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, Bill Coulam, Department of Human Services, Public Health Division. In regard to the six new positions, the 4.5 FTE that had been requested in this particular package, it was to basically shore up core capacity of the state staff in a unit called Community Liaison that does do a lot of community outreach, education, as well as additional support in epidemiology work for the local health departments. We still do have that unit. And, of course, our primary focus is to be able to provide more state support for public health, so we certainly would support the element here in this budget at this point in time.
Thank you. I was just curious.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Gordley?
Do we lose capacity on the epidemiological side of the... I want to make sure I understand.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we don't lose epidemiological capacity. It's just that our present capacity in regards to what we're staffed with under categorical grants is probably stretched to some degree. So in the event of continued or long-term outbreaks, our sustainability may start to be questioned.
And that's my concern.
Absolutely.
That's our concern.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 40, and this is something you'll see repeatedly as we go down the co-chair's budget, we presented these to you, is the removal of new tobacco tax that was in the governor's budget. It was associated with the increase of 84.5 cents to the cigarette tax. This removes $1.7 million that had been used to finance policy option package 10333 for emergency medical services. This would leave about almost $293,000 of general fund in that policy option package. Line 41 reduces the DRG hospital reimbursement within the managed care capitation rate to 80% of the actuarially determined cost. That reduces the general fund cost here by about $21.7 million. The next line.
Well, Madam Chair,
question?
Again, if we could understand for the record the impact of the reduction.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, when we calculate payment in the Oregon Health Plan, we have attempted through managed care to pay for the cost of services. Several years ago, when the state was facing a budget crisis, the hospitals and agreed that they would accept 72% of cost as a calculation in the managed care rate. We have been putting 72% of cost into the managed care rate for the last, I believe, two biennia. We had in the governor's recommended budget looked to increase from 72% to 90% of cost. What this line item does is increase it only to 80%. So that's why you see a reduction from what would have been 90% of cost to 80% of cost. Of course, anytime we don't pay for the true cost of care, we always have concerns about access, and are in the long run, we want to achieve the ability to, in all of our programs, be able to pay the cost of care.
Madam Chair,
This is one area that has troubled me deeply since I was the chief budget writer and negotiator with the hospitals at the time that we asked them to to accept this reduction with the understanding as times got better that we would bring them up to the 90%. So I know sometimes we're having to make decisions that where we made some promises several bienniums prior, and then we reach future bienniums and find ourselves still not able to honor our commitments. But I need to put that on record that that was a commitment that was made by this body several sessions ago.
I've got a question.
Mr. Brent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Line 42, in the governor's recommended budget, there was the addition of $22.1 million of tobacco tax, and general fund was removed. This reverses that, again, because the tobacco tax is not available. The new tobacco tax is not available.
Okay.
And it funds the Citizen Alien Waived Emergency Medical Program with $22.1 million of general fund. Line 43 is a similar situation where $100,000 was used of tobacco tax was used in the governor's budget to replace $100,000 of general fund for the juvenile diabetes database. Here we are reversing that and adding $100,000 of general fund. Line 44 was the use of new tobacco tax to expand OHP standard by 10,000 clients. We are removing that here. $45.1 million of tobacco tax, $6.6 million of other funds expenditure limitation, which was associated with both premiums that would have been received by the department, along with some additional provider tax revenue, along with federal match of $81.6 million. Line 45, this was a proposal in the governor's recommended budget, and it was re-estimated in the reshoot. This was to add to fee-for-service reimbursement with new tobacco tax dollars of $2.9 million. To bring fee-for-service providers, most notably physicians, up to 75% of Medicare cost. That is not being done here in the co-chair's budget, nor is it being added back with general fund. Line 46, in the governor's recommended budget, there was a total of about 17 or so million of OLCC, Oregon Liquor Control, revenue that would have been transferred through Senate Bill 184 to the department. That amount funded three different things. It funded about $10.4 million of A&D treatment for TANF clients as well as child welfare clients, and you'll see in a moment that that is being added back with general fund. It added about $3 million for youth substance abuse prevention and treatment dollars. Some of that is being added back. We'll get to that in a couple of lines. And it also would have had DHS pass through $3.6 million of OLCC revenue to the Criminal Justice Commission for drug courts. My understanding is that that has been taken care of in the Criminal Justice Commission budget, mostly with federal funds. And in any event, it did not show up as an expenditure limitation in the DHS budget because it was simply a pass-through. Got it from OLCC, transferred it on to the Criminal Justice Commission. So the line 46 removes limitation associated with those other two components, the youth substance prevention and treatment, along with the 10.4 A&D treatment for TANF and child welfare clients.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
Are you telling me then that part of the 2% OLCC money is indeed being used?
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, none of it is being used in this in this budget.
Well, excuse me. You mentioned there was some passed through to corrections. So it is being used somewhere.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, it is not. It is not.
Okay.
The Criminal Justice Commission is getting federal funds
okay,
for those
see.
Drug
okay.
courts as
so
opposed to OLCC.
We cancel the whole OLCC.
In this budget, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you. And just so I can get this, the clarification, if we had gone ahead and moved Senate Bill 184, I'm assuming that's not the plan. That would have designated a certain percentage to these things. We still might be funding these things. We're just not getting the dedicated funding for these things. Is that a proper way to get it?
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, yes. And you'll see in a moment where that funding is. It doesn't fund completely the youth substance prevention, but it funds a good bit of it. And we'll get to that about two lines down.
Okay. Thank you.
The next, line 47, is the removal of tobacco tax, which supported additional early assessment and support teams of $4.3 million. That was in the co-chair's budget. It is being added back, and you'll see that in just a moment as we walk through this. It's being added back with general fund. Line 48, as promised, this was the addition in the co-chair's budget of $1.9 million, which took the place of $3 million of OLCC money. Now, this funds several things. It funds suicide prevention phone lines at about $200,000 during the biennium. It funds a strengthening families program at about $1.6 million, and it funds a program tech to state prevention coordinator at about $200,000. So it doesn't do everything that the $3 million that was in the governor's budget through OLCC money did, but it does what the co-chairs thought was the most critical components of that at $1.9 million general fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette and Representative Kotek.
The rationale for not accepting the LCC money, as I understand it from one of the co-chairs, part of the rationale was it would have cost the general fund $9 million to have received that money from the OLCC. Do you have any knowledge of that?
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, I have some knowledge of that. I understand that that would have cost the general fund some. I was not aware of how much it was. I also think that there was concern about further dedicating monies to a particular purpose, just in principle, that in the future could tie the hands of the legislature. So it was a budgetary principle that was of concern as well.
Okay,
that was number one.
Okay. I would like to know, though, at some point, what cost of the general fund would have been incurred. I don't understand that part of it, and I'm just curious about it. So at some point, I'd like to know.
It's all general fund money. But if it had been dedicated, that money would come off the top before the money got to the general fund. So it would no longer be a general fund dollar. It would be a dedicated source.
That would have been new money, though.
Yeah, but it still would have been general fund money.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Kotek. Thank you, Madam Chair. Two comments. I hope we can revisit the dedicated funding discussion next session, because my understanding is the hard alcohol sales are the only set of alcohol revenue that are not dedicated at this point. So even though that set of revenues are on the rise, so I think that was one of the reasons for targeting it. The other issue, I'm really pleased to see some money back in general fund for youth substance. I would like to put on the record and potentially have this discussion about taking some of the money from the strengthening families proposal from the department to dedicate a certain amount of money to teen substance issues, particularly girls. We heard several types of testimony saying that we have increased alcohol use among teenage girls, and there is a program out there that we could spend some money on that is nationally recognized, evidence-based. It would cost $250,000, and I would like to have that under consideration before we finalize this budget.
That is something we could probably talk to the co-chairs about.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 49, you can see that in the governor's budget, there was $2 million of tobacco tax used to support expansion of school-based health clinics Again, the co-chairs removed the tobacco tax and added general fund to support that in their March co-chairs budget. The next several items were all funded with tobacco tax, and they were all removed in the co-chair's budget. One of them is added back, and I'll get to that in just a second. But these were all part of the governor's budget. The co-chairs removed about $11.8 million of new tobacco tax to expand the tobacco prevention and education program, $300,244 for new tobacco tax for dental sealant program for children. That is the one that is added back. That is down on line 57 with general fund. Line 52 would have added $689,000 for a healthy teen survey using tobacco tax. Line 53 frankly baffles me. This was something that I did. So, as I said, I never make mistakes, but this was one. But this was on our co-chair budget, and it would have added more tobacco tax, new tobacco tax for administration, which sounds highly suspect to me. So, in any case, it will be removed in an adjustment down below, which I'll get to in a moment. There was $5 million of new tobacco tax for hospital fee-for-service reimbursement in policy option package 108. The reshoot added federal funds limitation, and that is being removed here. I also, as I noted earlier, on line 55, we are removing policy option package 111 that had no expenditure limitation associated with it. This relates to the $3.6 million of OLCC money. So I just wanted that on there so that when the department is reviewing my spreadsheet and BAM is reviewing the spreadsheet, they know what's going on. Line 56 was a co-chair addition of $1.5 million for the Family Planning and Expansion Program. Line 57, as I noted a moment ago, would add back general fund for that dental sealant program for children, $300,244. Line 58 is an add back to reverse savings that were in the governor's recommended budget that were associated with implementing prior authorization for a preferred drug list and also adding mental health drugs to the preferred drug list. The total add back here is about $4.9 million of general fund and associated federal match and a reduction in other funds expenditure limitation. So that reverses that particular policy option package in the governor's budget.
Madam Chair, on that particular issue on Senate Bill 160, what would be the plans to discuss that particular topic in the interim? I know it's a contentious issue, but there's potentially a lot of savings there. I don't know if would that be an interim committee discussion or.
I think the leadership determines that and what's going to be on the agenda. But that's the only. What has been done in the past, John?
Madam Chair, I'm not familiar with all the conversations around the preferred drug list, so I can't say. I think it is a possible appropriate topic for a substantive committee right. on human services to deal with.
So, well, did you need to deal with that one?
I dealt with it in previous sessions, and there's it is a contentious issue, and it's one particularly when we discuss the issue of mental health. Mm-hmm. I think probably it's the mental health discussion that has we have a couple of statutes that that pretty much states that for mental health drugs that there is to be no substitute, and so that's actually part there, and there's a number of reasons why that exists because of the population that you're dealing with. that often it's one that you have a lot of effort just to get them to take the meds, let alone putting them at risk. So that's been a debate that's been in this building since, I believe, 1999 was when we had the first bill that came through, and there was an agreement reached with Governor Kitzhaber that we would carve that particular population out. So it goes back to 99, Representative Kopeck.
Thank you.
Mr. Budden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Finally, on the third page, line 59, we would add $1 million for Afrocentric mental health services. On to page 4, here is the addition of general fund at the top of the page in line 60 for early assessment and support teams. Again, that was funded with tobacco tax in the governor's budget. That was removed, and it is being funded with general fund here. Line 61 is, as I said, a replacement of OLCC funding for the second component of the OLCC package. This is $10.4 million of general fund for TANF and child welfare client A and D treatment. Line 62 is an addition of $10 million for community mental health funding, and I have a handout that I'll give out in just a moment. I'd like to get through the rest of these adjustments, and then we can come back to this if that's all right, Madam Chair.
That's your pleasure. My pleasure.
line 63 is an additional $5 million of general fund for graduate medical education along with associated federal match. This was a program that was cut, I believe, the last session. It had been in prior biennia, $10 million. This would add $5 million for second-year funding within the upcoming biennium for graduate medical education. Line 64 adds $7 million for the managed care organization physician access and incentive program. The idea here is to begin some work for pay-for-performance for physicians that contract with the managed care organizations. $7 million general fund along with federal matching funds.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kotek.
And thank you for your indulgence. On line 63 and 64, will we have any outcome measures for those particular ones? I think the restoration of GME is really important. And I'm curious about 64. I think that sounds like a great idea. I'm just curious if there'll be any performance measures linked with those dollars.
Madam Chair, we, as I'm looking at the performance measures, there are two performance measures related to DMAP. Now, they track a lot of other things, and I think before I would want to change the formal performance measures, I would probably ask the department for some suggestions, but I think that we can track some outcomes related to these additions. I don't think that would be a horrible thing to do at all.
I think, changing KPM, the upper level ones might be, you can't have too many, but the other, some kind of outcomes.
Well, you raise an interesting issue, because if you recall when we were discussing the percentages of kids who had the shots and DMAP was in the bus, then I don't think they measure at that particular programmatic level. I think they have overall measurements for performances. So there are some things that we need to look at in terms of outcomes as it relates to our partnerships. We really do need to do that. Because with as many kids as we have on OHP and as many kids as we have in the system, there should be a better way of knowing whether kids have had all of their inoculations. And we should have to wonder about that. So that does raise a good issue. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I'll continue with line 65. The effort here was to remove all remaining new tobacco tax from health services that was associated with the increase of the 84.5 cents. This removes $61 million of remaining tobacco tax expenditure limitation, along with federal match that was by and large associated with the Healthy Kids program. The bottom line, by the way, and I'll get to that in a moment, but I want to preview this. On line 74 under tobacco tax, the $383.1 million of tobacco tax now matches the May forecast done by the Office of Economic Analysis, as it was corrected by the Office of Economic Analysis. And while that may not be that significant to you, it is very significant to budget people like me, because we want to be able to track what's going on with our tobacco tax. So this removes all of the new tobacco tax. If a tobacco tax is ultimately passed, then we can add expenditure limitation so that the department can use that funding. On line 66, we are proposing to add $1.1 million of expenditure limitation for lottery funds. The May forecast was higher than the one used for the governor's recommended budget. Consequently, down at the bottom of the page, $13.2 million of lottery funds matches the May forecast at 1% of lottery proceeds that is dedicated to the Gambling Addiction and Treatment Fund. Line 67 is the addition of $3.2 million general fund, along with $5 million of federal expenditure limitation that is associated with TANF reauthorization. And Sheila Baker removed this money from the Children, Adults, and Families budget yesterday, and it was backfilled with TANF federal funds. It's being used here to match federal funds to provide an extended medical benefit for those projected to be included under the TANF reauthorization. Lines 68 through 71 are corrections to the old tobacco tax amounts. Line 68 is a correction to the reshoot that would add $279,000 of tobacco tax used to backfill general fund. Line 69 corrects the same problem with respect to the tobacco use reduction account. Line 70 is the difference between the March forecast, which was used in the reshoot, compared to the May forecast as corrected by the Office of Economic Analysis. Likewise, the same is true for line 71. Finally, on line 72, public health has some excess other funds and federal funds expenditure limitation, and we are removing those on line 72.
Questions? Senator Wesson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your very thorough report on 5031, John. And I was out of the room a little bit, but as I look at this, I'm trying to find if there was any add-back for the in-home care for seniors. I mean, you know, we were talking about $6 million. Maybe that's coming in as supplement, and I'm not supposed to ask. Or
no,
can you
Madam Chair and
Mylene or
Senator Westland, this does not include senior services. I will say that, and there is no $6 million in this budget for that purpose in this health services program area budget.
Okay, so I'm out of my category.
It's okay.
You can be out of your category.
He is quite often.
Can you still tell me if I'm smiling or frowning? I can't tell.
Mr. Redden?
Madam Chair, I do want to provide this handout to you. We talked about the addition of $10 million for community mental health. This is a proposal on how that would be distributed.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll review this list fairly quickly.
Okay. Colleagues, as Mr. Britton go over this list, what I tried to do is there was a mental health caucus who met fervently that Senator Gordley put together at the beginning of this session, and listening to everything that you have said in this committee, listening to the mental health caucus, that's how this is divided up. I take full responsibility for this in terms of listening to what different people and different activists have said in terms of what is needed on the front line of community mental health services.
Madam Chair, I don't have much to say about these other than to point out that there's $2 million in crisis services, $2 million in case management. We have a total of $2 million for children's mental health services, and you can see on lines 3, 4, and 5 how we have split that $2 million up amongst three different areas. $1 million for jail diversion program, $1 million for supported housing, $1 million for supported employment, and finally $1 million for local administration.
Questions?
Follow-up question.
Senator Wexner?
I think what I was trying to refer to earlier was any reimbursement rate increase for in-home health care workers. That would be in this budget. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Senator Westland, there is no increase for in-home care workers in this budget.
Well, I'd like us to consider that as we go forward.
Just to, I think, a couple of comments. Senator Westland, I don't believe that things are over until the bell rings.
I believe that's...
And so we will continue to work on this piece, and like we will continue to work on the global, you know, medical goods and on our mom-and-pop pharmacies. Those are things we're trying to have a balanced approach in this budget in order that we would help all of our little people as well as the larger groupings of people.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I just need to just make a quick comment, recognizing how difficult it is to manage the second largest budget, which is also the most complicated budget in state service. I want to commend you because you have tried to balance the needs given the resources that you have been granted, and I want to commend you for that publicly, and I also want to thank you for the 10.4, although I would love to have more. We always do for alcohol and drug, the piece that the co-chairs added in lieu of Senate Bill 184. There's a lot in this budget given the issue of the removal of the tobacco tax that the co-chairs have, and you, and I know how diligently you have fought for some of these pieces, so I just want to put that on record publicly to say thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to add my voice to that of Senator Winters. And I also want to acknowledge that you've had a very, very difficult task this session. And I, for one, appreciate that you agreed to take on the task in the first place, and that you have, and I want to acknowledge and honor that you have done this to the best of your ability. I honor that. I appreciate that. And I say that with the full knowledge that there are legislators in this building, and I've heard this over the time of my service, which again is 16 years. There are legislators who will not serve on human services. They say, don't give me that assignment. I don't think I can sit down there and listen to the stories and the pain and the suffering. And with that knowledge, I applaud you for taking this on. I know that you are looking beyond the conversation that we're having today, and that you are a chair and a leader in this process who also understands the need for revenue reform so that we can one day, hopefully, before we become dust, craft a revenue system that allows us to meet the needs of the people of Oregon in the 21st century, and most certainly the needs of Oregonians who are the most vulnerable. And the other thing I want to take the opportunity, this is going to be a point of personal privilege, Madam Chair. I hope that my colleagues who are serving on the committee this session will take time through the interim to reflect on your service on this committee and share your learnings with your colleagues, and share with them how important it is that they do understand the Human Services budget. Not just the budget, but the policy issues that lie behind the different budgets. And let's try to break through some of that lack of understanding, misunderstanding that exists in this building about the human services arena. We've got to find some ways, some creative ways of educating our colleagues, and I feel so strongly about that, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to put that on the record, because this is hard. This is hard to do. Because we're making decisions that will meet the needs of some, but we're leaving a whole lot of people behind and in dire straits. So we're going to take some actions that will hopefully do some good things. But we have got to find our way to revenue reform, and I know that I can count on Madam Chair toward that end. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions or comments? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In this list that we've just received, there are about 9 major categories, 8 that I would call substantive program categories, and I wanted to thank you for recognizing each of those categories in this allocation the way it is, and especially to call out and express appreciation, acknowledging the importance of supported housing. Early on in our discussions with the department, we talked about how stabilizing housing can be the key to helping someone stabilize their life. It can be the essential agreement to getting back on track with stabilizing both mental and physical health, and ultimately employment, and maybe even being reunified with a family. So I'm just very pleased to see, not knowing the details, of course, of which specific programs would be included here, but to see that supported housing is acknowledged as one of those key elements. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final comment, and that is that tomorrow we are planning on reviewing the seniors and people with disabilities budget along the same lines that we did today and yesterday. In addition, we have 2 bills scheduled, House Bill 2406 and Senate Bill 157.
Very good. Are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I am.
We don't need a motion.
Any other final comments before we leave for the good of the order? And thank you for allowing us to carry the overtime. Let's go to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate a few extra minutes. I think one of the things, and I have to agree, you've done a fabulous job, Madam Chair, in weaving together a lot of different needs and proposals. I think one of the things we didn't mention, and I feel badly that I didn't say something earlier, but that we will probably leave this session without new investments in Oregon Health Plan standard. Right. And I think that we are all upset about that.
That's right.
Because it affects a variety of services, not to mention thousands of lives. So just wanted to make sure we all took note of that.
So I don't, you know, when it comes to the issue of revenue co-pay of the Oregon Health Plan and the standard in the plus population, I don't think that there's any member on this panel who, and the other two senators who worked with me in 01 and 03 and 05, and where we really worked to make certain that the standard population and the needs of citizens were met.
Mm-hmm.
And we took some hard, hard votes to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was overturned. So we're still living from those actions that were taken by others after we, Sonny died and left this building, and where the general public decided that they didn't want to pay the surcharge for health care. It wasn't this body, because this body had this body, and that had gone forward, and I was chair then. It was a three-year program to allow for the care and services for this population that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we learned something each session, but I would have to echo Senator Wardley. It's kind of interesting if you go back in time in history and we look at the revenue streams for human services after Measure 5 on a statistical basis. We have not gained, we've lost.
That's right.
And so, I think we have to keep these things in context and perspective. And so we're constantly playing catch-up, and we're still playing catch-up.
Thank you. Let me say to all of you, you might be a little disappointed, but I want you to be prepared to work on Friday and possibly Saturday.
We don't have time to discuss about this issue.
We don't know yet, but we will keep you notified. Thank you very much. Committee dismissed.